Welcome to a Sober Girls Guide podcast, a lifestyle podcast based on sobriety and recovery. I'm your host and sober girl, Jessica Jabot. Inspired by my own sobriety and wellness journey, I want to spread the wealth of knowledge. Tune in each week for uncensored conversations about mental health, self-development, wellness and spirituality, and how they influence each guest's unique recovery journey. My goal is to educate and inspire and to let you know you are not alone on your recovery journey. Thanks so much for tuning in to a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Let's go! Hello, hello, and welcome to episode 222 of a Sober Girls Guide podcast. Tani Laura, the sober sexpert, is giving a new meaning to dry humping. She is giving you all the tips and tricks to dating, relating, and hooking up without the booze with her new book entitled Dry Humping. On this episode, we dive into those tips and tricks and the role alcohol plays in our relationships and how to do those relationships booze-free and be successful right now. This is such a fantastic conversation. Let's get into it. Tani, what's going on? How are you, girl?
Hello, my love. It's so good to see you.
Yes. Half awake. It's like rainy, gross outside, but it's great to talk to you. And I cannot wait to talk about your book, Dry Humping. Like, fucking love that title. That is hilarious. That is the best. I basically, that's how I describe like my high school life. It's just, you know, it's dry hump.
It's funny because when I picked this title, I obviously picked the pun, you know.
Yes.
But it's funny that I hear stories like this where people talk to me about actual dry humping.
Yes.
And I would have never ever, that was not the plan. I didn't think I was going to hear stuff like that. And some people tell me like, "Oh yeah, dry humping is one of my favorite sexual activities." I'm like, great. I love that for you. Like, never thought that was going to happen.
Yeah.
But you know, that's how it is. You put something out in the world and people are going to respond to it.
Yeah, exactly. I love it. And I love the term. I think it's so funny, but it is so, it's such an eye catcher, obviously. Like, come on, who wouldn't want to pick up that book and just be like, you know, a little ounce of curiosity. What is this? But I love that you chose that title. Like, that is perfect. Perfect for what you do and perfect for what you talk about. So before we get into the book, I would like to learn a little bit more about you and your relationship with alcohol before we get into your dry humping. and it just give us kind of like a rundown of, you know, how you got to this place, how you got to, like, you know, publish your first book and what kind of get behind the scenes of like what your relationship with alcohol was like.
Yeah, definitely. So I grew up in Central Texas and I was a stereotypical party girl bartender. I bartended, I danced on the bar. I was usually a customer when I wasn't bartending. My whole life was in a bar. Mm. And I binge drank until I blacked out on a regular basis. Okay. But the fact that alcohol was something that like I could take it or leave it, I was convinced I didn't have a problem. But you know, like one, like it's like I was like, well, I'm not an alcoholic because I don't drink as soon as I wake up. I don't have a drinking problem because I don't get as fucked up as that person does. You know, like I was really, I spent a lot of my drinking career, if you will, comparing my relationship with alcohol to other people's relationship with alcohol. And I think the problem with that, at least for me, was that while I was comparing it, I didn't see how problematic it was for what it was. Whoa. And like, I think that's that's like, I think one piece of advice that I would give anyone who's questioning their relationship with alcohol is don't compare your relationship mm-hmm. with it. And you do not have to hit rock bottom to make a change. You know, yeah. I did not hit a rock bottom. I left the bartending party girl world and I bought a one-way ticket to New York City
nice.
to try and make it as a writer, you know, as yeah. one does. And, you know, so I moved to New York June of 2015 and I quit drinking November 30th of 2015. So,
oh, wow.
Yeah. I didn't drink here a whole lot. I just had a few months and mm-hmm. I found that even when I moved here and I changed my circle, I was taking a lot of writing classes and yoga classes and just spending time with like-minded folks who were working on themselves, you know?
Yeah.
And that was where the shift started for me, where I was hanging out with my new friends and I would be the weirdo at the bar buying a round of shots. And
you were the weirdo dead.
Yeah. And like my writer friends would be like, whoa, why are you buying shots? It's like Tuesday at 5 o'clock. They're very happy with their one glass of wine.
Right.
And, you know, that was the first time that I saw my relationship with alcohol for what it was, like as a mirror. I was like, oh, I don't drink like these people do. And
whoa,
it took some time for me to really unpack that. But
how did it make you feel, like, you know, moving from a place where, you know, your drinking habits were like everyone else's, I would imagine, right? And then coming to New York,
yeah,
and kind of having this like reality check, like, oh, what, this is different. Like your relationship with alcohol is different. Like, what do you mean we're not doing shots? Like,
yeah.
What do you mean? Yeah,
it was,
why not?
It was definitely, it was embarrassing at first, you know, because I'm like, I'm literally standing there with like four shots and these people are like not wanting to take them. So
that was
uncomfortable, mm-hmm. you know? And then I didn't take it. I don't know if I put them back on the bar. I don't know. I don't remember what I did with them. But that was, I think that moment was the beginning of the end of my drinking for me. Mm. And like I said, it felt like a mirror. It really felt like, cause no one questioned my relationship with alcohol before.
Right.
You know, cause I'm hanging out with other bartenders and that's what we did.
Right.
And I'm hanging out with people that I met in a writing class and we are just getting a beer after a workshop and talking about the writing and everyone's content with their one drink. And I wasn't, I wanted to fucking rage. Like,
let's go.
Like, let's fucking go. 100.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So
it's
that's
so interesting. Yeah. Like, you know, like a lot of stories, you know, I hear people drink to connect with others. Right. And it sounds like this group of people, you know, drinking wasn't a priority for them. Like their career, their craft, like focusing on themselves, like you said, bettering themselves mm-hmm. was their priority.
Yeah. And it was
like, wow.
It was just very different. And, you know, to this day, I still say, like, I am not anti-alcohol. I'm it's not for me.
Yeah.
I never learned how to have a healthy relationship with it. If you know how to have a beer and not become an asshole, like, good for you. Like, I'm honestly jealous. I don't know
Same.
How to do that. but it, you know, it is what it is. Like, I'm not anti-alcohol, but I will say I am anti big alcohol and alcohol culture, the pervasiveness of alcohol is fucking everywhere. And mm-hmm. you're a weirdo if you decide to not drink. And I am anti that. So, I don't know why I just went on that tirade.
It's all good.
Whatever.
It works.
It just felt right.
Yeah. I mean, I love that you say that because I feel the exact same way you do. Like, we're not here to convert anyone. You know, if you are looking for that, like, that can be arranged right on. But yeah, this is like, we're here to have different conversations and open up the floor to different opportunities, different possibilities. Because like you said, the drinking culture, talking about alcohol, being like fed this whole kind of fantasy of alcohol, is the normal conversation, or has been up until this point, has been the normal kind of conversation that people have been having. So like, yeah. I'm down to throw a wrench into it.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad that we now have so many different terms for, you know, for what we're talking about here. Like before it was either you're an alcoholic and you go to meetings or you drink. And that was it.
Yes.
And even when I quit drinking in 2015, those were the only options. So, Same. You know, we didn't have sober curious or even mindful drinking. We didn't have any of those words back then. And I'm so glad that people have that now. I think Ruby Warrington, who coined the term sober curious, literally changed the world by inviting all of these people into this conversation of like, look, you don't have to give up alcohol forever. But let's just talk about like, what is it like to be curious about your relationship with alcohol? That's mindfulness. That's being present. That's being aware of what you're putting into your body and how it impacts your body and mind. And there's so many people that are going to read Sober Curious and listen to her podcast that probably aren't going to go to an AA meeting.
Right.
And that's okay. Like, I think that's actually really amazing that she tapped into these millions of people who want to reevaluate their relationship with alcohol, but just didn't know where to go.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there's so many spaces and so many different ways to kind of, I guess not, I don't love the word label it, but like find what you identify with. Like, I totally believe that sobriety is a spectrum. It's not black and white. There are gray areas. There are shades of gray. Right. And that can change as you change, as you evolve. We're supposed to change. We're supposed to evolve.
Such a good
evolution
point.
At its finest. Right. Like,
yes,
it's okay. Like, maybe you identify with one term this week, maybe in a year you don't, maybe it's something else, and that's okay.
Yeah, it really is. I like labels. They work for me. Maybe that's just because, you know, as a journalist, I like to know there's a name for something.
Sure.
And I can research it. And that helps me figure out my relationship with that thing. Like coming to terms with the bisexual label was huge for me because I was able to read about being bisexual, follow bisexual people on social media. Like, I finding a word that fits really helps me embrace who I am.
Mm, okay. Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it. I can see that for sure.
And some people don't want a label, and that's fine too.
Yeah. I mean, I do you, girl. At the end of the day, like, we got to do ourselves, right? Like, we got to, and like you said, the comparison game, you know, how you were comparing your drinking to other people. Comparison never works out for anyone.
Mm-mm.
It just doesn't.
Ever.
Yeah. Like, I did the same thing, right? Like, I went to a couple AA meetings and I was just like, well, not as bad as they are. See ya. Yeah. You know, and it just doesn't work. Like, it's not productive for anyone. Of course, do we all do it? Yeah, we do. You know, we're human, we can't help it. But to live there, to live in that kind of mode of comparison is so, it's so unproductive, because you don't know what that other person is thinking. You don't know their life. How could you? Right? Like, they look all maybe happy, hunky dory.
Yes. And we all have different metabolism. Our bodies process alcohol differently. One drink for me might mean three drinks for you. Like it varies on biology. If you have, if you're on medication, like there's just so much, like you said, gray. That if you find that alcohol is hindering your life, your relationships, your job, whatever, just take a break, cut back. Just, you know, like you don't have to label it. You don't have to, you don't have to do anything, but I think just being aware is huge.
So mature, man. Like, whoa. That's what an adult, like to me, I've been really thinking about like, hey, what does it mean to grow? Like, what does it mean to evolve? And what does it mean to like grow into yourself? What does it mean for you?
I love that question. To grow into myself. I like what you said about how, you know, evolution, we are always changing. And I think leaning into that and also accepting who we are, like as corny as that sounds, like I used to just voraciously read self-help books and like highlight them and like convince myself that I can be the best version of myself and like to the point of where it was borderline harmful. And I had to actually stop reading self-help books and going to self-help seminars for a little bit because they were actually ways to be, I found ways to be mean to myself. Like, you didn't accomplish this goal. You're a piece of shit. Or, you know, you didn't change this about yourself like you were supposed to. And it became harmful. So once I really reeled that in, got into therapy, got sober, you know, all of that, I learned how to accept myself, because I think like that can be the problem with some self-help books, is that, or at least for me, it made me think that I needed to be someone else, where I now look at these books and seminars and stuff like that as like, I want someone to tell me that I'm great as I am today. And for me, that was a huge part of my growth of accepting who I am. And I guess learning the difference between what I can change, you know, like the serenity prayer, you know, it really is a serenity prayer. What do I need to accept about myself versus what are some toxic traits that I need to unpack with a mental health professional that will take years and years and years versus thinking I'm going to read a book and become this different person?
I totally know what you're talking about. It's like, we're almost looking to, and I understand what you mean. Cause I sometimes do this with like spiritual healers or like energetic healers or like even like tarot readers or something, like anything, right? Like, I think to a certain degree, and I think this is completely natural, that we're all kind of looking to be saved to some degree.
You know? I was, for sure.
And when you're looking to be saved, that means that like deep down, maybe something, you're not accepting something, right? Or you're not at complete peace with yourself. I don't know if anyone is ever at complete peace with themselves. I mean, maybe we get like snippets and like little
snippets of peace.
Like, great. But yeah, there's nothing like inherently wrong with you. Like, you're not broken. No one is broken. You're not wrong. You're not right. You're not good. You're not bad. It's just like, we have a little bit of shit that we can improve on because we've gone through some shit. Everyone's gone through shit. Everyone's had parents. Everyone has had parents or some form of caregiver.
There's, I think that's really it. That's the acceptance that I'm talking about. And I recently read this book, maybe read it, The Perfectionist's Guide to Losing Control. It came out. It's
love that title.
It's written by a therapist, Catherine, I want to say Schaefer.
Okay.
Highly, highly recommend this book. And it was one of those, it was one of those self-help books that it, I would say almost like an anti self-help book, or even like its approach is like, you're great the way you are. Like, there's nothing wrong with being a perfectionist.
Right.
Balance is a lie. Things come in seasons. You're going to be really obsessed over certain things and you're going to let some things go. That book made me feel better. You know, I didn't highlight a bunch of sections thinking that this is what's going to fix me. I was highlighting those sections thinking, oh, great. Like, I'm doing pretty good. Like, this is, I like myself, you know? And I think that's the big shift, is that I didn't like myself. And I think like, spoiler alert, life hack, you have to find a way to love yourself.
Yeah, totally. Cause it really affects, like, it's like a domino effect, right? Like, how you think about yourself and how you operate about yourself, because I know this is a fact, because I'm very hard on myself. I tend to be hard on other people, but it's because I'm hard on myself. So whatever's going on inside gets projected outside. Just how it
absolutely
is.
It is.
So talk to me about dry humping. it is a dating, relating, and hooking up without the booze. What was the inspiration behind this? Let's start there.
Yeah. So, you know, I initially spent years writing this book as a memoir.
Okay.
About my personal experience with dating, relating, and hooking up sober, since I quit drinking. Spent years writing it, workshopping it, getting feedback, edits, you know, all of the things, and realized that in the process of writing a memoir, there's a lot that I want to keep private. There's a lot of my life that I don't want to share. Yeah. And, but I was still very obsessed with the topic of the role alcohol plays in sex and dating and relationships.
Yeah.
So I pulled myself out of the story, put on my journalistic hat, and I just did a bunch of research. You know, I interviewed dozens of people, mental health professionals, doctors. I interviewed neurologists to learn about what alcohol does to our brains and how that impacts us, when we're on dates, or, you know, when we're particularly relying on liquid courage. I interviewed sober people, sober curious people. I interviewed people who still drink, but were very open about the role that alcohol plays in their love lives. And I really wanted this book to be approachable for, which is why I wanted it to have like a lighthearted name, like dry humping. Like, because this is a heavy topic. Sober sex and dating is a very heavy topic, but I want someone to walk in a bookstore, see a funny title, laugh, and then be like, oh, okay, like, we're gonna go there, but she's gonna make me laugh while we do it.
Yeah.
You know,
entertain.
So that was the goal, you know. And like, this is the book that I needed when I was newly sober and I was Googling sober dating, sober sex, and there was nothing. Nothing out there. There is a fabulous book that I definitely recommend called Sex and Recovery by Jennifer Matesa, where she writes about sober sex through a 12-step lens.
Okay.
So that was definitely super helpful and a big inspiration for this book. So I think I just expanded the conversation to include all different types of people, whether they're working a program or not.
Yeah. Whoa, that is so cool. And like, you're so right, because our relationships, not just like based on sex, but relationships in general, definitely change in sobriety, 100%. The way we relate to others, the way we try to find ways to connect are completely different, because for a lot of us, alcohol was the binder. That was what got the party started, right?
Absolutely.
And so it's like, and what do you do? Like, what do I do with my hands? Like, do we turn the lights off? I don't know. What the hell?
Literally, it really is starting over from scratch.
Yeah.
And that's how it was for me. And that's okay. how I learned that it was for many, many people that I interviewed. Like, you know, I say I pulled myself out of the story. There's still, I share some of my story in there. As you know, as the through line of the book, but it's more to keep the momentum going as opposed to the tawny story, you know, right. like, because I wanted to hear from just different perspectives, because like I said, I like knowing that I'm not alone and struggling with something. So this yes. project really helped me, maybe forgive myself forgive and accept myself, because I'm like, oh, it's not just me. Mm-hmm. Literally everyone is struggling with this. And mm-hmm. that's some of the great feedback that I've received on this book. If for like from people who drink alcohol, that is the biggest compliment. Someone who drinks alcohol tells me that they felt seen in this book. That means the world to me, because I wanted it to be a cultural conversation, not just a recovery conversation.
Right. Wow, that's so cool. So asking you personally, from your personal experience, what were like some of the first steps you took in, like, you know, being newly sober and then also on the dating scene? Can you walk us through maybe some of the things that you personally did?
Yeah, I learned sober dating was very humbling.
Okay.
Where I learned that I had no idea how to date.
Okay.
I learned that, like I said, most of my relationships began in bars. Mm-hmm. So they would be drunken hookups that would sometimes turn into relationships.
Okay.
Or they'd be one night stands, or we would move in together, you know,
but Jesus.
I never really experienced the courting process of right. getting to know people over a dinner or going to the movies, or I didn't know how to date. I yeah. had no idea. So like I said, it really was starting from scratch. And something that I learned in my own recovery is, you know, this term called arrested development, where when you start self-medicating at a certain age. So like me, I started drinking and doing drugs at 15.
Yeah.
When your brain is still developing, you're losing so much brain capacity and neuroplasticity from basically outsourcing your feelings to something, to drugs, alcohol, eating disorder, gambling, whatever it is.
Yeah.
If you don't learn how to deal with something, you're in something called arrested development, where your development is in an arrested state, static.
Whoa.
So the reason I share that is because I got sober at 29, but right. I had the brain of a 15-year-old, you know, and
yep.
And that was mind blowing to me to learn about that. But again, that also helped me forgive myself and give myself some grace of like, okay, you yeah. didn't have the tools when you were younger. You went through some shit and you started self-medicating. Now you have the tools
yeah.
and you're trying, you yeah. know? So, and the reason I share all of that is because, you know, I got sober at 29, but like I'm going on dates and I'm so freaking awkward. I don't know how to engage in conversations without alcohol. And yeah. it was really scary. And this was like 2015, 2016. Dating apps were definitely a thing, but not what they are now. Not yeah. like, now it is almost weird if you meet someone IRL.
Yeah.
So I was like organically. On the apps. Yeah. Like that's an anomaly these days. But I was definitely on the apps here and there, but it just wasn't the same way. So it was okay. just a little bit different. So like, you know, I would meet people in classes, workshops, personal development seminars, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was awkward. And I had to, like, the first chapter of my book is called Dating Yourself for that yeah. exact reason, because I was so uncomfortable on dates that I was like, okay, maybe I'm not ready to date yet. Maybe I need to like figure out who I am. And I'm not the first person to say this. This is literally like, you know, in 12 step, you're not supposed to date or have sex for the first year of your recovery because early sobriety is so bumpy. It is so mm-hmm. messy, and you've got to work on your relationship with yourself first.
Right.
So the chapter one is really just my version of that. It's spending time alone, learning to take care of myself, going to therapy, dealing with the uncomfortable feelings that arise instead of drinking when they mm-hmm. When my feelings felt uncomfortable. That's the kind of stuff, like when I say dating yourself, that's what I'm talking about. Like, it's not just like self-care bubble baths. Like, yeah, that's great. Right. But I'm talking about like, you have to do like a significant amount of work on yourself before you bring someone else into that relationship.
Okay. Woof. That's
mic drop.
Yeah. I mean, that's scary. If I'm going to be completely honest, like, you know, I could imagine someone listening to this and being like, wow, that sounds terrifying and so boring. I'm out. Right? Like, why would I want to do that?
And I mean, I think that is a totally valid question. And I think, you know, my answer would be, you know, life is hard, and you can pick your level of difficulty, you know, like a video game here. Yeah. So it's like, you know, getting sober or being sober curious and going to therapy and feeling your feelings is really hard, and it's uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of unpleasantness with that, but there's also a lot of really magical moments that outshine all of the shit.
Totally.
But you can also just keep living your life the way that it's going. And maybe alcohol will continue to drive the bus. Maybe you'll keep getting in these shitty relationships. Maybe you're going to keep getting stuck in these dangerous cycles of self-destruction. You know, that's also hard. So if someone is listening and they're wondering that, I would just encourage them to figure out which level of difficulty they want to proceed with.
Ooh. That is a mic drop.
And I'm out. Bye.
Yeah, and we're done. No, and that's so right. You know, like, none of this is easy. It's just not. But it's like, you get to choose your level of uncomfortableness or toughness mm-hmm. or like whatever you want to call it. Like
discomfort. Pick your level of discomfort.
That's more particular.
I like uncomfortableness though. I think uncomfortableness. That's better.
I don't know. It feels like when you say uncomfortableness, like you can actually feel how uncomfortable it is, because it's also uncomfortable to say. So just really wraps it all up in one word.
I'm in. Let's change it.
Uncomfortableness. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I actually got a comment from like someone listening that like, that's not a real word. Stop saying that word. I'm like, well, it is now. Deal with
who
it.
Cares like just say what you want,
say what you like, want to say.
They can unfollow you.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, you're right. It listen, people are doing it though. I'm living proof, you're living proof.
Yeah,
we're doing the work, and it's great. Some days not so great, some days totally tougher than others, but like for the most part, I wouldn't want it any other way. I'm like, my God, this makes total sense. Like, learning about yourself is mm-hmm. like the coolest thing ever, because then you can actually give yourself what you need and want.
Yeah.
Like, what? Why wouldn't you want to give that to yourself?
And that's such a great way to reframe it. It's like, yes, everything we're talking about is hard. Like, it can be really, really difficult. Sobriety is not all rainbows and sunshine. It's especially early sobriety. It's going to bring up a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. But when that stuff comes up and you gather these tools and you put them in your tool belt, mm-hmm. it gets easier. Whereas if you stay on this self-destructive trajectory, you're not picking up any tools at all. So it's going to stay difficult. You're gonna have some sort of, you know, come to Jesus moment at some point. So you might as well give it to yourself, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's coming, whether you like it or not. But also, like, it doesn't have to be terrifying. Yes, it's life-changing, but I think in the best possible way. Honestly. Yeah. It's like,
they say, you know, sobriety will give you a life beyond your wildest dreams. And I think you and I are 100% testimonials for that. I mean, I never thought that I would have written a book, or that the internet would call me the sober sexpert, or you would have a top sobriety podcast. I mean, like,
yeah, who knew? Look at
all of this. Like, when you really boil down to where we are today, mm-hmm. it's kind of silly. And it's like, all I did was stop drinking and all of this stuff happened, you know, like it's kind of miraculous.
Yeah. I mean, definitely I would say stopping drinking was the gateway to kind of like unlocking patterns and like acceptance mm-hmm. that I have been literally keeping in the dark for so long, because I think I kind of knew they were always there, but if I actually acknowledged and accepted, you know, what I was doing, like what my patterns were, what my methods of like self-destruction were, then I would have no choice but to do something about it. Or am I going to be that girl that is aware of this shit, but chooses just to complain mm-hmm. and like glaze over it for the rest of my life and be like so many people in my life that I can't stand. And it drives me.
I was just going to say, if anything, just imagine, like in sobriety, I wonder, I'm like, wow, how was anybody friends with me? I was so toxic. I created my own problems and then complained about them. I purposefully allowed these terrible people to come into my life and hurt me. Mm-hmm. And then I would complain about it. Like, obviously I'm not saying that like I was asking for anything, but I did not like myself. So I just took just these little breadcrumbs of attention and validation and satisfaction. Right. And as soon as those started to flutter away, then I would crumble. And it was just, I was so unstable. I didn't know how to regulate my emotions. And that, you know, one of my best friends is a therapist, and he told me, he was like, you know, on the first day of therapy school, they tell you most of the problems you're going to encounter are people who do not know how to regulate their own emotions. And that always stuck with me, because we're not taught that in school. Mm-hmm. Maybe your parents will teach you, maybe, but we don't know how to cope with these really uncomfortable emotions and feelings. So we do things like drugs and alcohol and sleep around and gamble and develop eating disorders, because they help, they numb.
Yeah.
Yes. They numb something that feels uncomfortable. When if someone could have just sat me down and said, okay, this is a panic attack. This is very normal. Here are five things you can do to feel better.
Yeah.
That would have been a total game changer for me.
Yeah. Or like, you're not crazy. You're not like out of this world for even having these feelings.
Yeah. Like, this is very common.
Yeah.
You're not alone. I didn't even have the language to explain what I was feeling back then. You know, I just knew.
Yeah.
I didn't like what was going on. So I didn't even know how to ask for help.
Yeah. And that's definitely something that I've noticed. And like, so many people like don't even know what they're feeling or how to articulate how they're feeling. Because they've been so used to wanting to change that feeling right away, as opposed to like leaning in and being like, wow, why am I angry right now? Or why is this certain situation bringing up such intense emotions or intense like feelings and making me want to react, you know, very emotionally. Why do I think that that's even happening? Or like just taking a beat. Mm-hmm. But we're so used to being like, oh, you're sad? Cool. Let's try and make you happy. You got to be happy.
Let's get a drink. Let's forget all about this.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like, just eat ice cream. It makes you happy. Just do it. You should just do it.
Instead of being sad is the worst thing in the world, right? Like,
and sad I think that's, and lonely.
I had to learn how to let myself be sad. Like, we have to feel we have to feel sad and anger and resentment. And we have to feel all of this stuff. And again, we were not taught how to feel all of that. And it can be really, really overwhelming. Right. One of the many reasons why we say early sobriety and even sober curiosity can be so hard is because if you use alcohol to regulate your emotions, when that thing is gone, you're left with yourself. And that is where the difficulty begins. But like I said, you gather these tools and resources and people that care about you and want to help you get better.
Yeah, totally. And also just like you said, self-acceptance, like, mm-hmm. oh, I'm feeling sad today. There's no apparent reason and that's okay. Here we go.
Exactly. And I know. And it's like, and things like the weather can, like you're in like, it's rainy and overcast and it really affects your emotions, right? Like
totally.
We have to know how to deal with that.
Yeah. And like also not beat myself up about it. Like, so what? I want to crawl into my like bedroom of a cave and just like do my work from there, or maybe not even do my work, or maybe just take a couple hours and have a freaking nap.
You know, I did that last week. I had a rough day and I canceled everything on my calendar. I canceled or rescheduled and I just slept and my body and mind were so grateful. They were so happy. I woke up and I felt way more refreshed and I just took it easy that night. You know, like we put so much pressure on ourselves, I think, especially women, that we really just, we got to slow down and just let ourselves catch up.
Well, yeah. And like also PSA, like I personally don't want to like interview someone or like try and do something with someone who is just not into it. Mm-hmm. I totally understand. Like if you are exhausted or need time to yourself, go and do it, because you're not going to show up. You're not going to be, you know, who you want to be in that certain situation. You're just starting the cycle over again, right? Cause you're like, oh, I was tired. Or you come up with these excuses and then you go into this like shame spiral. It's like, oh, well, I should have done this or I should have done that. Or like, I should have said this or like, just take the break.
Take the break. And I promise everything's
going to be fine.
It really will. And whoever you're canceling on will probably be like, sweet, I can take a nap today.
Yeah, right. Then you give them time to like take a nap or like
you just freed up an hour of someone else's time now, and they're going to be really happy about that. And you know, it really is the whole, you know, put your oxygen mask on first kind of thing.
Yep.
Like you can't do anything well if you're not taking care of yourself. So whatever that means for you, if you're listening and you're like, I really need to take care of myself, do that thing. Like do that thing today.
Yep. Go figure out what you need and what you want to take care of yourself and do it. Mm-hmm. Do it today. Love it. Tani, where can we find you on the World Wide Web and how can we get a hold of Dry Humping, your new book?
I love that you said World Wide Web. So you can just log into your AOL browser
yeah.
and you can What, remember Ask Jeeves?
Oh my God. Ask Jeeves. Bring Jeeves back.
Yeah. How is he?
When you know what? He rebranded himself as ChatGPT.
That actually makes sense.
Yeah. Ask Jeeves 2.0. Yo.
So just, yeah, type dry humping into Ask Jeeves and you'll find my book. You can get it on, you know, online. You can get it in bookstores, all of the things. It officially launches September 19th.
Nice.
So pre-orders are super, super, super important to the publishing process. And pre-orders from a local bookstore are very important to your local community. Mm. So highly recommend that. I'm recording an audiobook in 2 weeks. So
cool.
If reading a physical book is not your jam, you can pre-order the audio and you'll hear dry humping in your ears.
Like music to your ears.
Literal music to your ears. Yeah. And I also have a weekly advice column for, it's all about sober sex, dating, and relationships. People send me questions.
Yeah.
It's called Beyond Liquid Courage. So I would love listeners, please send me questions. We always need questions for this. Mm-hmm. Anything about alcohol-free sex, dating, and relationships, we cover it in Beyond Liquid Courage.
Amazing. And you can sign up for that on your website, which is...
Yeah. Just tawnylara.com and find me on all of the social medias at Tawny M. Lara.
Perfect. Amazing. Tawny, thank you so much for sharing your experience and your knowledge with us. I really, really appreciate it. It's been so much fun. And I can't wait to get my paws on a copy of Dry Humping. Love it. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
How friggin' hilarious is Tawny? Oh my gosh, I just love her. I love the title of her new book and I cannot wait to read it. As always, thank you so much for listening. Please make sure to rate, subscribe, leave your feedback about the podcast. We'd love to hear your comments. And of course, sharing is caring. If you have a friend, family member, loved one who needs to hear the message in this podcast or any other episodes today, please send it along. Share the episodes because we want to keep the message going and help as many people as possible. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at A Sober Girls Guide and head over to asobergirlsguide.com where we got your back at any stage of your booze-free journey. From the Sober Girl Social Club to group coaching to our self-paced worksheets and downloads, we got your back at any stage of your booze-free journey. Head to asobergirlsguide.com now. Thank you so much for listening and have a great day.